just stepped into this role in an interim basis and wasn't familiar with it in the first place too much. But I think she also is a little more organized, to be blunt, than the past CHRO. So I'm hopeful that this will move forward a little more expeditiously now. So on the volunteer day proposal and resolution, I think the chancellor will speak a bit about that during his comments today. I think it's still stalled a bit given the enormous focus of leadership right now on the budget situation. So we'll see his update. We had a very, very brief pre-staff last week and didn't get too much time to dive in. Nate, did you want to add anything on that one?
I think that there might be some people here who are frustrated by this sort of confident in the they talked about, the community has talked about sort of supporting the principle, but also the being concerned about the academy, I think probably for them also, in terms of how it's implemented. So I share that frustration. I don't know, other than continuing to bring up with Chancellor Powell, I don't really know what youth force we got or we it was supported, and so the proposal was supported and fine by the primary chancellor. So I think that makes it a little bit difficult to put anybody's feet in the fire on it. I guess that's all I have to say.
Yeah, I think we'll keep raising it and keep pushing it, and he did say he expects us to keep raising it and pushing it. So we're not being told to be quiet about it or asked to be quiet about it. So hopefully we can just keep bringing it up until it gets dealt with, so that we'll be stop annoying people about it. I think we'll just pester till it's done, basically, which is unfortunate, but I think, yeah, understanding maybe not a priority item as much as we'd like it to be right now. We've got a few minutes before public comments start, and our ASUAF representative is here in the room. So, Leslie, if you'd like to give us the ASUAF report, that would be great.
Thank you very much. My name is Leslie Drumhiller. I'm the Government Relations Director for ASUAF. And I'm going to read a report. ASUAF student government is currently occupied with preparing students to lobby in front of the Alaska Legislature and the Board of Regents. With the Alaska State Legislature, we plan to talk about the budget. Alaska's present fiscal crisis has profound implications for students both here at UAF and in future careers, and we must communicate the university's need for funding and support. Last week, we invited Senator Pete Kelly to discuss the budget and other issues with students in the ASUAF office. Next year, we will be sending a team of students to Juneau to lobby in person alongside representatives from student governments across the state. When the Board of Regents meet in Fairbanks this week, we will have an excellent opportunity to advocate for students and express the issues we feel strongly about. We expect two common themes to be brought up, especially often. Number one, Title IX issues. As most everyone is aware, Title IX issues and campus safety have taken on special precedence this year at UAF. We strongly support this move and applaud the university's vigorous efforts to make the campus a safer place. However, much more work needs to be done. Number two, academic programs. As UAF continues to review academic programs, it's important that we as students express our desires and our priorities. A frequent topic of discussion at ASUAF is what we perceive as a worrying trend toward prioritizing workforce development and more practical programs over the arts and humanities. Although the pressure of the budget crisis is undeniable, we directly need programs such as philosophy that enrich our experience and provide the social underpinnings for other areas of study. These programs create a value for the university that is difficult to find elsewhere, making us stronger as a whole. In the past, ASUAS has encouraged administration to cut programs horizontally, reducing the scale of several programs rather than eliminating or suspending a few. We expect students to discuss this issue in depth in both with statewide and campus administration. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Does anyone have questions for Leslie? Thanks, Leslie. That was really comprehensive.
Thank you.
Anyone online have questions for Leslie from ASUAS? All right. Thank you very much. All right. Do we have anyone for public comment today? All right. Then I think we can roll right on to our guest speaker, Brianna Walters from the Office of Management and Budget. Welcome, Brianna.
Okay, so Faith handing out two handouts today, and the first one, well, first of all, I'm Brianna Walters, if you don't know me. I've worked in Office of Management and Budget for about 2.5 years now, and I started out at UAF Grants and Contracts about 11 years ago, and then I worked in statewide cost analysis, and now I'm here. So I will say, even when I started at the university, I was not familiar with the budget process. In many ways. So this, I think it's good that we now have this office and we can communicate what the budget process looks like and how we develop our budget at UAF. So Faith handing out, the first handout that I'll go over is the colorful handout that outlines the FY15 revenues and expenditures at UAF. So it's a snapshot of our revenue streams and our expenditures, what we spent our money on. You may have seen this before. We've produced it in the past. Also, what we've done this year is we have a few basic definitions on the back of the sheet this year. So we've outlined definitions about our unrestricted versus restricted funding, and then some of our expenditure categories. So on the revenue side, when we talk about cuts from the state, 42% of our budget is from the state. So when we talk about cuts, it's in this category that is shrinking. Our first cut occurred in FY15, and then it again happened in 16. It almost doubled to $13 million, and we're also looking at a cut impending for FY17. Our other major revenue stream are federal receipts. And again, that's on a declining trend as well, and not just at UAS, but at other universities in the nation. Auxiliaries make up another piece of our revenue stream. That's mainly the bookstores, housing, residence, life. Tuition and fees make up about 10% of our budget. And the Board of Regents did approve a 5% tuition increase across all levels. So that will help a little bit. So enrollment is sort of on a decline right now, so the impact to UAF is a bit less. Receipts and partnerships. This category consists of the UA Foundation grants and contracts or other contracts from corporate or private sources. Indirect cost recovery makes up about 5% of our revenue, and that's in direct alignment with the federal receipts category. So as federal receipts decline, ICR also declined. And finally, the ARRA funding. That will probably be zero next year, as they're expiring pretty much this year. The last of it, I think, was for Sikulyak. So that's a separate sort of funding that spiked in FY 11 and 12 and now is on the decline and won't be a continuing source for the future. So on the expenditure side, our two largest categories are, of course, salaries and benefits and contractual services. In another item to note for travel, travel makes up only about 3% of our budget, but in FY15, the state mandated for UAF about a $520,000 decrease in that specific category. And so UAF actually exceeded that target as a way to manage the budget gap. And finally on this sheet, in the lower left corner, we're trying to outline what the budget gaps are. So part of it consists of our state general fund cut. So again, as I mentioned, the first cut occurred in FY15, and that was about $8 million. It almost tripled in 16. And for 17, they're projecting right off the top, they're asking all state agencies to prepare for a 4.5% cut of your general fund right off the top. And for UAF, that's about $7.8 million. The other part of our gap consists of our fixed cost increases. So that's our compensation mainly, some utilities and other costs of that nature. So the thing to take away from this chart is that for 17, that could change as the budget unfolds and the legislative session begins in January and occurs through April. So the blue piece of that graph, the $7.8 million state gap, could increase. It's unlikely that it would decrease, unfortunately. So that's what they're asking us to prep for now, is the 4.5%. But it could become bigger. So that's what UAF is trying to prepare for right now. So really the thing also on this sheet is that proportionally we haven't changed our proportion of our revenue streams or our expenditure, what we spend our money on. It's just that the pie is smaller. We have smaller resources to work with. So we are looking for other ways to increase revenue from other sources aside from the state because it doesn't look promising for the next few years. Yeah. So does anyone have any questions on this sheet right now?
This is Selena on billing now. I was wondering if you could send that to us.
Yep, and Nate just posted a link right in the chat there, Selena, and then Nicole is also sending it out through email.
Thank you.
Yep, so you should have it in your email as well. And I'll note for all reps that if you want to share it out with your units, Nicole has sent the link out, and we do have a few spare copies here in the room, too, if you want to take any back to your units at the end of the meeting.
So the next handout, so moving forward, looking into the future, the next handout is the FY17 legislative tracker, and this is a sheet that we maintain. This is what our UAF portion of our budget that the Board of Regents did approve in November. So we will continue to update this sheet when the governor's budget comes out, which is expected by December 15th. So we'll know what pieces he hopefully has kept for us and not zeroed out for us is what we're hoping. We hope his budget is similar to what we've asked for. The next step after that is when the legislative session begins in January, and that will occur through April. And that's, at least from last year, from FY16, that's when they did, unfortunately, zero out a lot of what we did request. But we'll keep the sheet updated and communicate with you as the budget process unfolds. So a few things to note about this sheet. You'll see the first column of numbers is the state appropriation. That's UAF's portion of what we are asking for from the state for our budget. As a reference item, we included the system-wide budget at the top, which would include statewide UAA and UAS. So that's about $351 million.
So UAF at the $172 million is about half that. So that's what UAF consists of. The receipt authority column, this is a reference column. It's not a real ask for the state. It's not what we're asking for from the state. It represents funds that we can obtain from other sources, private or public sources, and it's really just an estimate. So the state likes to know that we have ability to receive funding elsewhere besides the state. So they like to see that it is an estimate, and then that makes up our total budget. So our budget ask, it has three main categories. The fixed costs, which are at the top, that includes compensation, utilities, O&M, facilities and repair. We also have a few regulatory mandates that we're asking for, which include Title IX, the disability support, and compliance in the areas of Office of Research Integrity. The second area are the high demand program requests, which are in the middle. So these align with the Shaping Alaska's Future themes. And we have a couple of items within each area. So we're covering areas of student achievement, public and private partnerships, and research and development. And a few of these are actually prior year requests that were not funded, so we're asking for them again as a point to the state. We want to finish what we've started and what we've asked for in the past. So that line item there for the high demand, even in declining budget times, we still want to show the state that we're trying to invest in important areas at UAF. So that's about $1.3 million. It's a very lean request. It's less than 1% of our total budget request from the prior year. So it's very lean. And finally, at the bottom are the capital requests. So in previous years, we've had several items in this category for areas of energy or earthquake research, or oil spills. But this year, the priority, we are only asking for completion of our engineering building and deferred maintenance. Those are the two top priorities at UAF. So that's what we're asking for. That will change. I mean, the legislature, the processes that occurs from January through April, it fluctuates wildly. They usually have a lot of questions for UAF and all campuses, really, in relation to their budget request. So we'll see how that pans out. The other thing is that the Planning and Budget Committee will also convene in January, and that's made up of representatives across UAF. It's headed by Provost Heinrichs, and they'll look at the Vice Chancellor's budgets and their projected targets, what they're working with what we know today. That process will occur through April, and then they'll bring their recommendations to Chancellor's leadership in April to refine those and make final decisions about what will be happening with each unit's budget by July. Does anyone have any questions on that? The other thing that's kind of happening at the same time is the statewide transformation team. I believe work teams are developing now to look at some of the recommendations. So that could impact UAF. It's a little early to tell what those impacts could be. Potentially UAF maybe takes on a few areas to some degree. It's not quite known. But the president will be hiring a consultant to also look at what their ideas are and how to implement them. And again, that timeline would start in July too. So there's a lot of potential changes happening in the coming months. So, but with this tracker, we'll keep it updated as the governor's budget comes out, and we'll populate that area, and hopefully it stays the same as what we've asked for. And then the legislature is where it gets a little more unpredictable about what they'll keep or what they'll take away. So,
as Brianna noted, it'll be updated when the governor's budget comes out, which should be December 15th or
right.
so. Mm-hmm. And so this link that's in the agenda, you can get an updated version there and see what the governor included. And that's what the legislature will work from.
Right.
They won't necessarily see our original budget ask. They'll just see what the governor puts forward.
Right.
So if he doesn't put it forward, chances are it's not it's done for this year, so it'll be good to take a look when that gets updated.
Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I just wanted to mention quickly is that the process improvement teams have been working for the last few years on several initiatives at UAF, and Faye really helped develop this. We have a results document, basically, that's posted on our website. It's in the process improvement area under the results link, and it's a really nice summary. It's got kind of a one-page summary of each area that was worked on, and it outlines some of the accomplishments achieved and efficiencies, and some identified what our savings were over the years. So, you know, in these tight budget times, this process improvement information is really important, and we're continuing on with that and starting new projects with that as well. So that's a good thing. I didn't bring copies of this today, but it is on our website. So does anyone have any questions about anything that I've covered?
Don't be shy if there's any terms that you want more information about, too, because we tend to use them so often that we forget that they're kind of jargony. So if there's any term that doesn't make sense, or numbers that don't make sense, or any questions about the process, mm-hmm. please feel free. You won't sound stupid.
So this may be a better question for the Chancellor, but in previous years, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, UA and UAF had kind of a unified response to, or sorry, a suggestion for how to talk to the legislature. You know, they wanted people to talk about the value of the institution, and then I think it was the engineering building, and they really wanted to have that focus. Do you know if there's going to be a similar guidance for you know, university people talking to the legislature?
So we are coming out. They're working with marketing to come out with an advocacy sheet for engineering, and so as that is our only capital item on that FY17 list, they are developing some talking points. On a personal note, you can contact your legislatures on your own. I believe you can't go through your UAF account as far as an email account. But we always encourage you to talk to your legislatures and advocate for UAF. But as far as in public forums, I do think they like the cohesive messaging to speak with the legislatures.
Mm-hmm. And I think, some of the information that Nate put together for board advocacy that we'll talk about later in the agenda applies with the legislature as well, which involves really focusing on impacts to students. Again, that's really, since that's the mission of the university. And then also where you feel comfortable talking about kind of the financial impact to the community as well as cuts. So just always thinking about what are your legislators thinking about, and it doesn't always sound good to say, yeah, I work here and I want to keep my job, keep money in there, but if it's a, you know, you have 2,000 constituents who are dependent upon this for a job, that might make the tone a little different, but I do think the Chancellor will talk about it a bit, and I expect that it'll be more information on that as well. We did have one online, Trish. Oh, yes, sorry. The dollar amounts are in thousands.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so 1,377 is 1.37 million.
Great. And I don't know if you had a chance to attend the leadership forum on Friday, but they mentioned that, again, the student and the faculty are sort of the most compelling for the legislators. But again, as far as staff, if we can come forward from a community perspective, that's helpful as well.
Okay. All right. Any last questions for Brianna? And we'll put another plug, too. There's also on the OMB website, right above the little 101 on the side, if you just go to uaf.edu/OMB, there's a little kind of talk bubble where you can always submit cost savings ideas or revenue generating ideas. And we go in there every so often and look at that, and we'll bring it forward with groups like the Planning and Budget Committee, or send them to the appropriate person who may be able to implement them. So we've gotten some good things through through there before. So, and then, you know, any questions that come up, you can just email uaf-omb@alaska.edu, or you can just email me, and I'll work with Brianna to answer it as well. So, okay, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Thanks so much. All right, moving right along, so dive into officers' report. So, as Brianna mentioned, the Planning and Budget Committee will be beginning in January, and I was asked by the provost to appoint a representative and an alternate. So I did. Trish, maybe I can send that out after the meeting. It's just under process improvement on the website, and then there's a results section under process improvement, and it should be right there. But I'll send out the direct link as well after. So there's a quick turnaround on that. So I appointed Nate as our – yep, there it is. Thank you. Nate will be our representative on the Planning and Budget Committee, and then Trish will be our alternate. So that'll be something once they get going, too, that you know, we'll have kind of the conduit to that committee, and we may be tapped depending on what topics come up to provide additional feedback through our representative. So, or I would also stress, if there's stuff that you're thinking about in relation to planning a budget, reaching out to Nate and or Trish and or me is good and helpful. And then, as with last year, I will be support staff to that committee, kind of in my day job role. So we'll have actually a pretty good number of people in the room as that moves forward. And a little differently this year, as we mentioned, it'll start with the vice chancellors putting forward, basically, if they had to meet this cut target in their area, here's sort of how they do it. And the committee can look at them and say, oh, we really don't like cutting that much there. That seems counterintuitive. Maybe we'd rather preserve that area and have a steeper cut over here. But they'll start with some information from the vice chancellors as a starting point, which I think will help them get off the ground a little faster than in past years, too, not having to really start from scratch, basically, and coming up with things. So the next piece is we got an offer from Human Resources to consider, it hasn't really gotten into any details yet, but to consider sharing resources on printing the calendar, because they in past years have printed a calendar for PTAs and kind of kept at their front desk, and the only information that they put on that is paydays and holidays, which we already put on ours. So they were offering potentially to put some money towards our printing of it, and we would keep our layout the same and just say UAF Staff Council in partnership with UAF HR. So we're still trying to figure out if that would work and how much it would be, but I wanted to run that by you guys as well and see if that's something that you'd be okay with. All right, I see some thumbs up. Any concerns?
There are other groups that print calendars for the year. It may be worth looking even broader to see if there's other folks who'd want to buy into that calendar instead of printing their own.
Yeah, that's a good point. One of the easy things with HR was that the people they print it for, their audience, were people that we would already be printing it for. And some of the other groups, I think, print it also for faculty and have kind of a broader distribution where then we'd have to print. I'm thinking of, you know, the ARSC always did a pretty one. So I don't want to slow down the timeline too much or add too many complications to Nicole's plate as she tries to get it going. But I think that, yes, if it's easy to do, it would be worth it. And if not, maybe seeing this one come out in partnership this year would mean next year it would be even easier in advance to get more and to do it as a partnership. I think if we word it correctly, it's clear that we're not the same organization and we're not serving the same role or any kind of confusion there.
anybody online have comments or concerns about that? And again, this is still pretty initial. It was someone from HR came to me and said, oh, what if we did this? Would this work? So before pursuing it all the way to the end, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't off base in terms of what you guys would want. Yeah, I think it's not a huge budget item for either group, but it's nice to share resources and not duplicate when we're in budget times. So. All right, if anyone does have concerns and wants to just email me offline with them too, that's fine, but if I don't hear any concerns, I will just kind of keep going with this and see if we can get there. Trish, I don't think HR usually prints copies for them. It's usually they send them out to people who work specifically in HR. So like the PPAs and HR assistants in the units, so people that we would actually represent. So from a first discussion, I don't think we would actually print any extra copies. Yeah, that was kind of the first question was, okay, do we then have to print another 300 copies or, you know, how do we do that? But I think actually it would just be not giving people two copies of a calendar. So. Yeah, I think so. I don't think it'll be a huge amount, but knowing that this is an area where as governance's budget gets cut, that's one of our first places to cut. We'd rather cut that than cut support for our meetings, for example. It's nice to have the potential to kind of balance that out. Another item that came up in executive board that Jane brought forward was we had heard that some staff were being turned away from the post office when they were trying to renew their PO boxes and had been told that staff could not get PO boxes anymore, even though they also confirmed that there was no shortage of PO boxes. So Nate and I did raise that with Kari Burrell during our pre-staff, and she said, that's weird. I haven't heard about that. I'll look into it. She also mentioned that the post office itself, they've been trying to figure out where that should report and who should kind of oversee it, whether it goes under the bursar's office, whether it's under facilities, where it lives, and that maybe during this kind of transition there's been some confusion. But she certainly hadn't heard of any plans to stop offering it, so she'll look into it. And we can follow up with her next month as well. So, yeah, that was one where it seemed strange.
I'm not surprised that was her.
Yes. So another item that came up last week at pre-staff, and I think this is some really excellent news, is that staff council and faculty senate, the presidents will both be invited to attend the chancellor's cabinet going forward, and will be on chancellor's cabinet starting with December 15th, which is huge in terms of being looped into leadership decisions at the university, looped into kind of what's moving and what's going on. And I think hopefully sets a good precedent for when we fill the permanent chancellor position, if we are already on cabinet going forward, then we have a good chance of continuing to be on it as opposed to trying to get in. And so that actually, I think all credit for that, in my opinion, goes to Debu Mistra, the president of ASUAF, who pushed really hard for that with Mike Powers, beginning actually in the interviews for interim. He said, would you do this? This is something we think is important. And I think he kept on asking. And then it became, well, if we're doing this with faculty senate, then we'd better do it with staff council too. So a big thanks to our colleagues in faculty senate for making that happen. I think it's really excellent. So that'll be Debu and me going forward. And then I think, after the next officer elections, the next president, and then Orion, who is the president-elect of Faculty Senate. One thing that we expect to see at Staff Alliance coming up
is a regulation change addressing the jurisdiction of campus safety officers. It doesn't seem to change much in practice, but I'll be sure to share that with you guys once we hear it presented with a little more context at Staff Alliance. Basically, the idea is that right now, if one of our campus safety officers has looped off of campus, for example, and is driving down Sheep Creek, either Sheep Creek or, for example, Farmer's Loop there and making that loop. If they're off campus, we haven't in our own policy defined their jurisdiction. So if they respond to something, there's the potential for a legal challenge saying you don't actually have jurisdiction that's been granted in this place or in this way. And so it sets it out that this would only be if they're not, where it doesn't take away from their ability to fulfill their duties to the campus community. And I think it doesn't change anything in practice. It just adds kind of the legal background for a practice to continue. So as I hear a little bit more about that, I'll bring it forward, but it is a regulation change that we're expecting. The next bit is, I think I'll be meeting, I haven't scheduled it yet, but I plan on meeting with Ardeth Lynch, the interim Chief Human Resources Officer, to kind of raise some of the common questions that we've had about furlough implementations. And a lot of that came up when we were first looking at the furlough policy and regulations and saying, well, how would this work? What would this look like in practice? What would this look like in practice? And that's where the majority of the concerns were, you know, that it's really the devil is in the details and that, okay, what does that actually then, how would it work for my retirement? How would it work for, would I have to take it all at once? How does it work differently for salary versus hourly? So if you guys have specific questions about that, or if you've been hearing questions in your unit or people speculating or wondering, if you want to go ahead and send them to me in the next week or so, I'm going to try and get a meeting with Ardeth and try to work through some of those so at least they can put together an FAQ. Or if there's places where we feel very strongly that things should be done in a certain way, I can kind of bring those up with her too, and hopefully that way before anything comes out about here's how we're definitely doing it if we do furloughs, that we've kind of had our voice, so we're not just responding, we're being a little more proactive. So please just email me with thoughts on that, or email all of staff council too, if we want to have kind of more of a discussion. Yeah, did you have a comment?
I just want to point out that the statewide organization for at least their executive directors on up did do a furlough for this fiscal year, and if they share, if they learned anything by at least doing that small subset with, you know, the governance group, then, you know, we'd have a better idea if it actually saved money or had an impact that they didn't anticipate.
Yeah, that's a good point, because that was throughout the entire system. It was all university leadership, so it also included deans and directors and basically anyone in an executive or senior leadership position with the university. And, for example, one thing I heard with that was that initially when the letter came out, it said this is applied against your base pay. Well, the problem with applying it against your base pay is it's your base pay that calculates your retirement, is counted as your retirement earnings, especially in your final years. So calculating it against base pay has a real unintended negative consequence for our employees who are closer to retirement. And I heard that at least when I spoke about this with Dan White, who's the Vice President for Academic Affairs and Research, and he's also where governance reports at a system-wide level. I mentioned that to him, and he said, yep, I got that letter, and I sent it back to them and told them, I'm not signing this, fix it, it shouldn't be my base pay. So that's an example of somewhere where I think they had a bit of back and forth at that level that I would want to preserve that win going forward for any other employees that might be facing it. But I know we have a lot of other questions about how broadly it might be applied, and a big question about salary versus hourly, you know, when it actually is implemented. So If you're thinking about that, if you're hearing about that in your units, if you have questions, just please email me within the next week or so. I'd appreciate that. And then I'll have Nate speak a little bit more about some of the board testimony bit during his report, but I'll be speaking with the board and giving the governance report again at their meeting on their meeting Thursday and Friday here in Fairbanks in the Board of Regents conference room in Butrovich. It's open, so you're free to attend or to live stream. And the agenda is posted online, so you can see what they're talking about. And I'll have a few minutes, and I haven't written my testimony yet. So if there are things that you'd really like the board to hear, you can either tell me now or email me, preferably by the end of the day tomorrow, because I really need to write my points before I get in the room. otherwise, I will make a fool of myself. So I don't know if there's anything you guys really want the board to hear from your perspective. Anything now? All right. I plan on continuing to stress on the financial impacts and where that really impacts our mission, and hopefully covering a few kind of achievements and highlights as well. So kind of the same general message going forward. I haven't seen anything on their agenda that I think would trigger a real response type action, but I do think that we've heard from the regents repeatedly from a few of them over the last 2 years or so that I don't think they quite get what the cuts mean, because they see us going on, carrying on sort of as usual. We're still delivering services. Our students are graduating at the same pace they were before. So to them, it really does seem like, to some of them at least, it seems like, all right, well, we probably should have made these cuts years ago. We've just been cutting fluff then, if we're still able to fulfill everything. So I think really where we're able to touch on the impacts to students and service from the cuts, that will resonate the most strongly with them. So with that, yeah, again, please email me any bullets or thoughts, including concerns and including any highlights that we don't talk about today. I would like to stress some of the really good things we're doing as well. So with that, I will turn it over to Nate. Unless anyone has any questions for me. Sorry. Okay, sorry, Nate.
Thanks, I know well about that. I don't have a lot that's not covered elsewhere in the agenda or just how it's been addressed just now. I think I would say personally that
Okay, let's go ahead and get started with unfinished business. So for the fall election, it closed on Sunday, I believe, and we want to quick have a little bit of an update from our elections committee?
Sure. I just looked it up a second ago. We had 20% of the eligible staff voted for representatives. So I don't know what historically this has been, but when I looked a few minutes ago, you know, we had 20% participation in the ballots.
That's about double our historical average, I think. And Nicole says, yeah, the highest she's seen in her time helping us. So, yeah, actually pretty impressive. People are clearly a lot more involved and aware than in past years. So really great, and great job by the committee, yeah.
Okay. I also want to thank Nicole because she's really the one who puts the word out for our staff that, you know, the elections are open and whatnot. So even though we have our elections committee, Nicole was really the one who got the word out on our behalf. So I really appreciate that, Nicole.
Great.
And also thank you to Phil for fixing a lot of problems.
Yeah,
not a lot. But
yeah, some great troubleshooting. And, there were one or two times where we heard from people who were having trouble voting. And between the two of them, Phil and Nicole managed to respond right away and helpfully and get people in and make sure they had access so that they could vote. So that was really fantastic work. And so my understanding is we're still sort of sorting through some of the final results because in some areas there were a large number of candidates and then with at-large as well. Some of it will play out where there were some people who were nominated both in a unit and at-large and received votes in both areas. So we are working through some of the final results, but I believe given the timeline, it would be appropriate for us to have this motion to ratify the results now because we couldn't do it at our, if we waited till our next meeting, we'd be waiting months to bring people on.
My understanding was from when Walker was chair was that we're ratifying the election process.
Okay.
And not the final results.
Okay.
So in the past, that's how we've done it.
All right.
Either way.
Okay. So we do have a draft motion. It's attachment one. So the motion is just the UAF Staff Council moves to ratify the 2015 Fall Staff Council election. That our newly elected representatives will officially begin their terms on January 1st, 2015. So if someone would bring that, I can't bring motions to the floor, right, as president. Phil, would you like to?
Sure. So I'd like to bring the motion forward. I forget the phrase we use.
All right. Do we have a second?
I second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All right. And is this a roll call or just a... No. Okay. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And good. I see I'm rolling in online too. And any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you again to our elections committee and to Nicole. Great work, guys. And as soon as those results have been formally established, we'll share them out, and you guys can congratulate the new representatives. All right. Any updates from the Advocacy Committee on the mentoring,
the mentoring survey / initiative. Jamie, did you have something you wanted to? Yeah, thank you. All right, can you guys in the room read that okay? Is the print big enough? Or I can read it out loud? Okay. I see nodding heads, but yes, they'll be meeting with Margot Griffith from HR to discuss the initiative and how it might be structured. So things like what are the responsibilities of someone mentoring, you know, and kind of what are the boundaries, how is that put into place going forward. So I think it's really good that we're partnering or at least discussing this with HR because we want to make sure that it can be supported across the university.
Well, the part of that required training for the university kind of covers that as well. I've had a lot of feedback from other staff that said, why do I have to take this training? We're not going to deal with any underage people.
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about it, but, I mean, it's just part of a requirement for everybody has to take that. So I don't know how much more I need to expand that. And if everybody's required to have it anyway, I don't understand.
So I think this one was the mentoring where if, for example, I'm kind of new in my career and I'd like some help from someone else who's like a senior business analyst.
Okay, not for people that are from outside then.
No, it's like an internal peer-to-peer mentoring, basically, where staff had said, yeah, I would either be willing to mentor someone or I'd like to be mentored for career growth.
Yeah, but this is mentoring towards a younger audience, yeah.
Yeah, so it's basically just if someone wants to be mentored and if someone's willing to mentor them, how do we connect them to each other completely voluntarily? So, I think it's something people have asked for that would be nice to offer and is probably something that we can manage. So, but yeah, would need cooperation with HR. All right, Chancellor search update. That committee we met on Friday for kind of a quick update and briefing. We've received some applications so far. The application closes January 15th. And the input we received from the consultant was really our most competitive and strongest applicants will probably apply right at the deadline. They'll take their time. So we've seen some coming through so far. I can't really talk about anything about the candidates themselves, but we have been seeing some, and he's also been having some good conversations with potential applicants.
Can you even discuss if they're internal or external?
I don't know if I can discuss that. My impression is no, but that seems very restrictive. I think the executive board had discussed as well, maybe in at our February meeting.
Yeah.
Having the search
general, I don't know why that would be.
Yeah, we can have the chair of the search committee, who is the official spokesperson for everything about the committee. I think we could have him as our guest speaker in February, and there should be, at that point, applications will have closed, too, so we'll know what we've got as a pool. So I'm thinking I'd like to invite him to be our guest speaker. And that's Paul Reichart, who is a former provost and former faculty. So he's been very good. The first, there's really only been a few so far. But we do have the ability as well, if you happen to know people in the community or from other universities or, you know, who you'd like to invite to apply or encourage to apply or nominate, you can also do that by just sending their name to the search consultant. And so if you want that contact information, just let me know. I think I'm only allowed to talk about general process and not about candidates, is my understanding from the confidentiality pledge that we took. But I think I would like to, unless anyone would prefer not to, I'd like to invite the chair of the search committee to our February meeting for an update. I think that's pretty important, and we should have some good kind of more, basically, to talk about at that point. So finally, the Staff Alliance has kind of a new committee that was looking at staff morale issues. And I think kind of the intent of this is sort of to connect representatives from across the system to kind of share good ideas about staff morale, you know, what are we doing at our different universities that's working or not working, you know, how do we partner, promote, you know, and share some best practices. And that's being chaired by our UAS representatives on Staff Alliance, but I think they said, yeah, if they got some more people appointed to the committee, then they could start meeting. They haven't met or anything yet. And I think really defining the scope of that committee is still up in the air. But so there's a lot of opportunity, I think, to be involved with that and kind of shape that discussion going forward. So if I could have two volunteers, I'd like at least one of them to be from one of our committees that touches on issues of morale, either advocacy or staff affairs, to kind of loop in some of those things would be great. So any volunteers for that? All right. Leslie, anyone else? This might be a good one, too, for some of our rural reps. And Jamie, too, that would be great. I mean, we could have three. I think this one, since it's a system-wide one, it'll only ever meet via distance communications. So if there's any rural reps who wanted to be involved with this one, too, that might, you know, you won't be the only person not in the room. I don't if that's ever been a concern for someone or felt awkward, then.
Volunteers so far?
We've had Leslie and Jamie.
And Dean?
Jamie Warwick.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll put those two names forward, and then if anyone else wants to be involved, then I think we could probably put as many people as we want on. I just don't want it to be so huge that it's unwieldy, but... Great. Thank you guys for volunteering. All right. Any questions before we move on? Okay. Internal committee reports. Phil, do you want to add anything for the elections?
I don't have anything to add.
Great. Thank you again for all your work on that. Trish, membership and roles? Yes.
I went ahead and posted up on the chat also, but the Membership and Rules Committee met on the 17th. We continued our bylaws review process, and we expect to bring a motion to the January meeting reflecting our corrections and updates. We also received feedback from new reps who started last year who said they felt that it was unclear what was exactly expected of them in their roles. They wanted to do a good job as staff council members. And the executive board felt that membership and roles was a good group to work on this. So we are drafting a roles, responsibilities, and expectations document to bring to a future staff council meeting. So our next meeting is Tuesday, December 15th on Google Hangouts. And
thank you, Trish. And just a quick point of clarification, we actually don't have a January staff council meeting. When we passed our meeting calendar a couple months ago, we said we're not going to meet in January because people will still be coming back from break, and with the break, you know, there won't have been a lot going on. So I look forward to seeing the motion at the February meeting. Thanks. All right, Chris Brooks, Rural Affairs.
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, hear you great.
Okay. Our meetings don't tie very closely with the cut out. I'm not exactly sure that parts would be covered in the last. But just as a summary here,
Great. Thank you, Chris. And I should have mentioned as well during officers' reports, the tobacco-free campus enforcement and expectations, Nate and I did raise that as well during pre-staff and mentioned both the chancellor and to Kari Burrell that we'd like a little more communication around that, specifically the enforcement and expectations. And Kari said, yeah, they need to kind of get on that. And basically, even if the expectation is that there won't be really enforcement and consequences to start, if it's starting with a soft roll and hoping that that goes well, then they need to communicate that this is our intended approach. And if it becomes necessary to need more formal enforcement, we'll look at that later. Brad, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that so the Board of Regents policy and then the regulation that was produced out of that was approved is a soft enforcement. There's no fines or fees, no explicit punishments, and that's by design from the top down. And certainly I'm sorry if that hasn't been communicated well enough out to everyone, but I think that it's been on the smoke-free webpage, the tobacco-free change since that webpage was up, and that's been put in the cornerstone several times. So the enforcement expectation is one of, if you see someone using tobacco on campus, you politely ask them, hey, did you know we are a smoke-free, tobacco-free facility? There are no fines or fees. You know, it's designed to not make people feel put upon. And I think, yes, the hope is that you're going to slowly change the culture over time. Just to speak really quickly to the rural sites, we do have, Chris asks, what if they say no? You say thank you and walk away. There's no confrontation encouraged or asked for. In fact, it would be specifically discouraged. We don't want people starting fights over tobacco use on campus, even after the no-use date. If there's a continued problem with a specific person using tobacco, the regulations do say that for a student, it goes to the Dean of Student Services, and for employees, it would go to their supervisor. However, before any disciplinary action happens, for employees, it would go to the HR office, and for students, I think it also goes to the Dean of Student Services. So the idea in regulation is that any kind of punishment is an absolute last resort. And just to speak real quick to the rural campus locations, we do have a member from CRCD on the tobacco-free group, and we have talked about that. And one of the things that's come up with that is that for the campus sites, you know, they aren't as big as the Fairbanks campus. You can literally just walk off campus, whereas that's not such a possibility here. And so just as a reminder, on the Fairbanks campus, come December 31, there's no tobacco use anywhere on campus except in your personal vehicle. And so in order to walk off campus, you'd need to go to, you know, Farmer's Loop or Geist Road or Fairbanks Street. So there's no smoking areas other than your cars on campus.
Thanks, Brad. That was really, really helpful. So, I guess I would encourage everyone to look at that site as well, and then if there are specific questions that you can't find an answer to, then we can get there. Dean, did you have a...
I have one quick question. Is this on?
I think so.
Has it brought up about contractors doing work around campus? How are we going to enforce that?
It should be part of their contract language. Either the contract can allow for tobacco use for contractors if they have a site that is totally within their control, and that's a possibility, or there will be no tobacco use within their site, and again, that would be part of the contract language.
I'm in a totally different world than anybody else because I work in industry, and I'm thinking about the new power plant and contractors, and I mean, it's don't have anybody that smoke, chew, or whatever, and so... Are we going to force it to the same? I don't know how we're going to force the same. Sorry, you can't work here anymore. Or these are questions that have been asked of me, so I didn't know.
Yeah.
And cynically, I think that may be part of the reason that the regulation allows for a site that's totally within the control of contractors, that it could allow for tobacco use. Practically speaking, I don't think you're going to see a strong enforcement there, you know, unless you have contractors who are visibly smoking in front of employees. And I would say to all UAF employees, you know, if you see contractors smoking, you can certainly report it, but I wouldn't take it personally. You know, there are going to be people who break the policy, and it'll be up to, you know, for the contractors, it'll be up to grants and contracts to figure that out, and we should deal with ourselves and not worry too much about, well, oh, the contractors are smoking, so I should be able to. That's probably not a good approach.
And actually, it probably wouldn't be grants and contracts because they manage the contracts we receive.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That are given to us. There's a contract services or so either contract services, which handles, you know, like our dining contracts and some of those, or procurement would be another one. And then, yeah, design and construction. So probably just depending on the area. But, yeah, it's a little broad. I think, yeah, that is... focusing first on our employees, but then if it's an actual problem with contractors, raising that up the food chain is always an option. Thanks. And Nicole is sending out that tobacco-free website as well for everyone, so you don't have to go looking for it. All right. So that actually probably covers, we had under announcements, the UA going tobacco-free December 31st. So if you have any questions that come to mind in the next few minutes, just hold them for that. Staff Affairs, Jane.
So we met on November 20th, and we talked about three major issues. We continued our ongoing conversation about the morale issue and came up with some sort of strategies for how we're going to how we're going to handle that from Staff Affairs Committee sort of perspective. We talked a bit about the layoff grievance process and review process versus review process, and we're going to be looking really closely at the regulations and making sure that we, you know, understand as much to the extent that we can the specific wording of the new regulations, and looking into the case for trying to proactively make adjustments to those if that's what we want to do. And then we also talked about an issue that's come up with a few staff members who were part-time at the time that leave is calculated, and therefore were shorted on some leave hours, and they were part-time because of reduced contracts. So, like, during the summer, you go to part-time for 2 months, and that fulfills your 11-month contract obligations, and then there were some employees that fit that category who may have been shorted some leave hours of personal leave. So we're going to be working on some communication to those employees. Ideally, we would like to... make it so because the number of those employees is pretty minimal, but we want to make sure that they get that memo because it is kind of something that some people have discovered and not known about. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be meeting next Friday, the 18th.
Thank you. Any questions for Jane? All right. And advocacy, Jamie, did you have any other updates? Great. Thank you very much, Jamie. And that brings us up perfectly to Chancellor's remarks. So welcome, Chancellor Powers.
Thank you very much. Very briefly, a couple of issues on the budget process. Governance, Board of Regents, relative to the budget process, the timeline, just as a reminder, the Board of Regents approved the budget in November. There have been ongoing discussions between Jim Johnson and the governor's office and the need for contingency planning, and that's where we are right now, initiating that process. We expect to see the governor's budget any day now. Haven't seen it, but would expect possibly this week that release. We'll know where we stand. But as that occurs, we're going through the contingency planning effort. The legislative session, of course, January through April. By the end of April, we'd expect to be 80% complete with the budget planning, and then finalize June of 2016. So that's the general timeline. We expect to see the budget, governor's budget, any day. We are doing contingency planning right now, 80% complete in April, and then complete by June. The process, the provost and the vice chancellors are working with unit leaders right now for FY17. They will submit those proposals to the Planning and Budget Committee in January, and then the Planning and Budget Committee will assess those and make the recommendation to the chancellor's cabinet in March, and final decisions April through June. So those are both the timeline and the process. Relative to shared governance, and just talked briefly with Faye on this last Friday, but one of the initiatives in particular, Dr. Debu Mizra wanted to promote was continued opportunities for representation at the Chancellor's Cabinet. So the full Cabinet with the Deans and Directors meets every other Monday, and I have invited faculty, staff, and students to attend that with the Deans and Directors. So another voice, and as we start working through a number of the issues Faye probably may have addressed already, but the smoking cessation, obviously the budget process, some of these other initiatives, faculty, staff, and students will be right with the deans and directors as we work through those issues. So I think that's a great endorsement of the shared governance process, and hopefully will be well received here. Board of Regents meeting Thursday and Friday of this week. Public testimony on Thursday and Friday, 1 hour, typically 3 minutes. Again, just for those who I had mentioned this before but didn't know, Chief Doug Trogge is the wonderful example of how over time you can use this public testimony period to promote an initiative and to make headway. So my time, again, I spent 4 years on the Regents, every single opportunity in all of the campuses, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Juneau, I don't recall, there would be someone from the fire department testify about the need for a new fire station. Now we're in the grips of a budget crisis, but that initiative to replace that our facility here on campus was endorsed, was championed by the most conservative member of the Regents because of, I attribute, Bobby's persistent
thoughtful advocacy through his firefighters in all parts of the state. So here we are coming up to a couple of Board of Regents meetings. If there's something, whether it's tuition, whether it's the budget process, whether it is this incredible effort that I think is going on in this campus relative to advising, that might be an opportunity to highlight. Use this as an opportunity, and I don't want to suggest or orchestrate or be perceived as I'm ever doing that with the Regents, but I do want to highly and strongly encourage you to use this as an opportunity to tell your story on any number of fronts. There's so many great things going on. There's things they should be aware of. You may have a thought on controversial issues such as tuition or the need for planning on smoking cessation, the endorsement of that, obviously the convergence of the campuses through a common calendar, whatever it may be. Use this as an opportunity. It's best received, testimony in Juneau. Measured, thoughtful, straightforward, factual, histrionics and drama that gets you nowhere. But thoughtful well-represented fact-based testimony is always, always appreciated. I would encourage you to do that. I know a number of people will be stepping forward, but use this as an opportunity to highlight some of the great things going on. Engagement survey. So let me just give you a few comments here and tell you where I'm coming from. My experience on engagement surveys is that typically, and having been through a process of about 20 years of these things, is you know exactly when the results are going to be compiled, how they're going to be rolled out, when the action planning starts, how you follow up on action planning. And the engagement survey here at UAF is really, this is a bit of a first. And so we find ourselves a little behind the wheel. Those results are still being compiled, is what I understand. But I'm going to commit that we get these out before this break, hopefully next week. We'll just get them out to everybody. And then in January, we'll begin the formal action planning on what the results say and how to move forward with it. So having come to this a little bit late in the process, I have a little bit of a different perspective on how these things tee up and roll out. Again, talking with Faye, we'll bring this up next Monday at the cabinet when we have faculty, staff, and students represented to talk about the rollout process and what it looks like, get the engagement and ideas on how best to get this out, what to be looking for in action planning, have a bit of a report from Carla and Brad who are championing this. Long-winded way, I come at it a little bit different perspective, and so as I enter this this process, I think we find ourselves where are the deadlines and the expectations, and we'll get those laid out here quickly. Results out hopefully this week, next week, and then we'll see where we are in the process, and then start the action planning after the break.
Great. Thank you. Sure. Does anyone have any questions? Yeah.
Do you anticipate those results being sent out with the Cornerstone? Is that what you're thinking?
Probably. My understanding is a direct email to all those who have completed the survey. Now, don't hold me to that, but it'll either be that or a website of some sort, those results.
So we should expect a specific email about the results and not to have to kind of keep an eye on the newsletters for a...
Exactly. Okay. You'll be... we'll get an email out where to find those results and what the expected action steps are, rough timeline of what will occur. We'll pick up next week in the cabinet meeting.
Great. Thank you. Other questions for the Chancellor?
I just wanted to quickly comment for the survey results. Like, I know I didn't take the survey. I'm sure there are others who didn't either, but we might still be interested in seeing the results. So if the plan is to email them only to people who completed, I'd like to see we distribute it a little more broadly.
You bet. And it could very well be a website. Everybody gets the email, and you go to the website that provides the overall results. Everybody's entitled to the results.
What about online? Do we have any questions for the Chancellor on the Hangout there? Okay. And any others in the room? Okay.
Well, I would just wish everybody a great holiday season.
Thank you very much, and happy holidays.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, we have our staff achievements and highlights, and I wanted to start that off by giving a big thanks and commendations to our representatives who are coming to be completing their terms on staff council. Hopefully, we will continue to see you. I haven't seen the formal results of the next election, so I'm not sure how many of you will keep seeing. I hope it'll be everyone who's interested in continuing. So thank you to the reps who are completing their terms, Jamie Warwick, Mercedes Anderson, Chris Brooks, Kim Eames, Jessica Armstrong, Jessica McCallum, and Selena Brown. You guys have all done a really excellent, excellent job and have been a true pleasure and honor to serve with. So I hope we will continue to see your faces or hear your voices for the next 2 years. So if we could do a round of applause for those representatives now. All right. What about any other staff achievements and highlights to share? Does anyone have any coming in? Any in the room? Any online? Okay. Well, if you think of any or hear of any, in the next day or two that you would like me to share with the Regents, I would very much appreciate it. I think I'll go back through some of our archives from the last few meetings. Since the Regents are in Fairbanks, I don't feel shy about promoting Fairbanks-specific ones in my general staff governance testimony this time, the way I've held back a little bit before because the other universities don't do this, and I don't want to come across as a real Fairbanks partisan. When I'm representing all staff in the governance testimony, but I think since they're in Fairbanks, it's entirely appropriate to say, here are some great things happening in Fairbanks while you're here. So, like I said, I'll go back to the archives, but I would appreciate fresh ones as well. I know they're out there. Great. Thank you guys again. We do not have any new business items for now, so I'll just roll right on to announcements. Again, the Board of Regents public testimony. We have the memo from governance leaders that that I'd like to send out today, along with the dues that that Nate put together for us, which I think are, again, so helpful. And it does have that link for our rural reps in the dues sheet. It has instructions on what to do with written testimony if you'd like to submit any written testimony. So this is as an attachment in your agenda, and then Nicole is also providing a handout in the room, and then we'll send it out to all staff that we represent directly today as well to encourage that. So again, please encourage the people that you speak with, encourage your units, and I sincerely encourage you as representatives to use this opportunity. And if you have questions or concerns or want to talk it over, just contact Nate or myself, and we can provide some feedback or thoughts or discuss it together. Nate, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I think that's what Senator Caldwell said. I would encourage folks to read the memo. It's got some information in there regarding work as governance groups and leadership about how we think, you know, the most effective messages should be delivered. Also, regarding the TIPS document, I guess I was just reading over them again this morning. expressed to me that they might, for those experience with the board and the testimony and trust, some of those might come off as either presumptuous or even pedantic. And they certainly aren't intended that way. I think that I was just imagining, and we as a group are just imagining, folks that might not have presented or prepared testimony for, you know, for public comment, like these forms. So that's all they're meant for. So, you know, if people have experience with it, I think that they should, you know, feel comfortable preparing all those ones that they were just meant for those who don't.
Yeah, that's a good point, Nate. I mean, I thought the tone was excellent, but definitely this, you know, this is not prescriptive in any way. It's just meant to, if you don't know where to start or, you know, have never done this before, it's something that might be helpful. And none of this is meant to be prescriptive, as the Chancellor said. You can speak on any issue you really want to speak on that might be of interest to the Regents. These are just some areas that we thought were good opportunities for governance to advocate. All right, any questions on that? Okay. Statewide leadership transitions. So as I mentioned earlier, we did have two resignations in the statewide leadership recently that were effective immediately. So those positions have been vacated. That was the Chief Human Resources Officer, Eric Seasted, and the Vice President for Finance, Dr. Ashok Roy. And so that's pretty normal when you have a new president come in, is to have some transition in the top kind of top support there in those executive roles. Basically, because they are so closely tied to executing the president's vision, and you have a very different vision when you have a new president. So I think from my perspective, those are both positive developments and encouraging. I think I've heard frustration expressed in the past about some of the strategies within those offices, that I think this kind of marks hopefully a new kind of paradigm going forward, basically, in the function of those offices and how they work. So they are being recruited now. I know we have campus representatives involved in those committees, and I'm working to clarify the staff governance representation on the human resources officer. The last I heard, the search committee had a representative from the Statewide Administrative Assembly, which is their version of staff council, but it wasn't a system governance representative, which I think is problematic because that's certainly a position that impacts all our staff throughout the state, and someone who only represents statewide staff does really misses a big part of the picture. So I'm hoping to remedy that either with a staff alliance representative on the committee or kind of deputizing one of the system-wide, or sorry, statewide staff on the committee to kind of loop in a little more closely with them and help them share a more statewide perspective or system-wide perspective from staff on that. Because it is, I think, a very critical position to staff. We work pretty closely with that office on policies and procedures and, you know, all the functions that touch staff, compensation as well. So hopefully we'll have some updates on that soon. I know they're already recruiting. They're looking to fill it pretty quickly. And in the meantime, we do have Ardith Lynch in the interim role there. On the finance side in interim, we have the controller, Myron Dosh. And that finance role is definitely more one of the kind of compliance control, central accounting, reporting. It's not the budget and strategy role. So that one touches a little less directly on staff. So any questions there?
So, Faye, when Eric was hired 3 years ago, I don't know if Staff Alliance was on that committee, but Staff Alliance was invited to the presentation he gave before he was hired.
Yes.
So there was that opportunity for comment.
And I, when I raised it, my concerns with the president on Friday, from my staff alliance meeting with him, he did stress that, he would look into the committee. He didn't make any promises on that, but understood my concerns and was interested in addressing them in some manner, but did say, yes, we would, with the finalists, they would have kind of a, public forum or public presentations and opportunities for governance to view finalists and kind of weigh in the same way we tend to with leadership positions. So I think that'll be very important. And as I hear more, I'll make sure that we get that sent out. If it's in between the next, now and the next meeting, I'll make sure we share any opportunities for comment there. Any other questions on those? Any online? Okay. Employee engagement survey. I think the chancellor covered that. He had more information than I did, so I'll just move right along. Just as a quick update, the PageUp HR software, the implementation timeline has slid a little bit. Initially it said January. I think it'll be within the spring semester, but they had some transitions in the within the vendor itself. They had a staff transition there, so we had a little bit of a slip while they got the new person on board and into the role. I think it's moving along. Moving along steadily, but don't be concerned that you haven't been trained on it yet if you were expecting to work in it. It's not intended to be live and rolled out January 1st. So I think as we hear more updates on that, we can get them shared out. And I am kind of looped in on that committee as well. So if you have questions or concerns about that, feel free to share them with me, and I can always bring them up. And then, again, the UA tobacco-free for Fairbanks, that will be December 31st, 2015. So when we come back from the holiday break, we will be tobacco-free. Any other questions or comments on that after our earlier discussion? Any online? Okay.
And if you have any suggestions for other places we can put signs or places where you would notice communication if they were there here in this final stretch, please feel free to send me an email, or the committee meets this Thursday. You could come to the committee meeting. But, any place we can get up more signs or notices in this last period leading up to rollout would be great.
Thank you, Brad. All right. Skipping over that performance eval because we haven't really been doing much with that yet as PageUp rolls along. The external statewide committee reports, I wanted to point out, in addition to the attached report from November 20th, there is an additional staff health care committee report that I think Nicole, did you email that yet? Okay. Nicole will forward the email for those of you online, and Stacy provided a printed copy for those of us in the room. So there was a second meeting, and I think there's some important points in here. So, Stacy, do you want to run through those for us?
Sure. I'm new to the healthcare committee, and we did meet the first time, and you have that report attached to the agenda. We did meet for a second time because the Joint Health Care Committee were meeting to vote on some proposals, and we wanted time to discuss that with each other and forward our recommendations. So on what I've given those in the room and what those in outlying areas will get soon, talked about a couple of proposals, and one is a retrofit plan that they're talking about. They rolled it out as a pilot program, and there is a cost to it. It's been very successful in changing habits and behaviors and trying, you know, to control weight and health. And so with this cost, the Joint Health Care Committee would like to approve that. The maximum cost is $65,000 and 100 participants at the maximum. This time, those who would participate would have to pay for some of the initial costs and $20 a month. It could only take a limited number of doing it, but it seemed like the results in the pilot were successful. So after discussion, we voted as a committee to forward to Joint Healthcare to say yes. The others that we talked about were the deductibles and out-of-pocket maximums that are puts UA system in compliance with the federal government. We voted yes on that as well. It changes some of the deductible and out-of-pocket maximums. And we felt that it just put UA system in compliance. The third that we voted no as it stood was there was a motion to increase the 750 and HDHP pharmacy, the individual and family maximums. There was such a huge jump in the differences in the out-of-pocket maximums, which that we felt like we could not agree with that. It was, and I'm sorry that I don't have the numbers here. I will forward that as well. Just one moment.
Is that the one right below it?
You know, I think that's what it is, and I just don't have the numbers of what it currently is right now, but it changed it considerably, and we felt like it was a group that could in the pharmacy plan could ill afford to have like more than double what they were having to pay themselves before the out-of-pocket maximum kicked in. So we're hoping that they take our recommendation, that they relook at that and maybe phase it in. So we're hoping to have other discussion on that as well. The other, and I won't go into all of it, but there were some additional considerations in the wellness program design that just changed the biometrics that they're asking for in FY17, that if you have 3 out of the 5, if they're met, that you'll earn the rebates in FY19. I believe each year those participating do have to do the personal health assessment every year. So we did forward that. 2 of our members are part of the Joint Healthcare Committee and represented our motions.
All right. Any questions for Stacy on that one? Trish, did you have a question?
I have one question. Why did they propose increasing the out-of-pocket max and the pharmaceutical? I mean, what symptom or what was the reason that they considered doing that?
I believe that they were looking nationwide and hoping to have it go up to what is happening across the nation. But our committee felt like it was too big of a jump to do all at one time. If they're thinking that that needs to be phased in, then I think it's too hard of a hit for a small number of people to take all at one time. And truthfully, I have just joined the committee. That was my second meeting, and so I really need to study up some more on all of the background to this. But if you ask me a question, I will do that and answer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Stacey. All right. Brad, did you want to mention anything on compensation? We've got a bit of time.
Okay. Sure. So we're going to meet this Wednesday. And do you know, is President Johnson and Tara Ferguson, are they still going to meet the Staff Alliance on Tuesday? Is that still on the plan?
I think we will not have President Johnson, but we'll have Tara Ferguson.
Okay. So for our Wednesday meeting, I'm planning to listen in to tomorrow's Staff Alliance meeting, sort of hear what Tara Ferguson's the UA compensation director, or director for compensation, I'm not sure of her exact title, and sort of see what kind of, if she gives any clues as to what UA's strategy is. In past years, let me start that over. So usually what the compensation committee does, as the Staff Alliance committee, is does some research and legwork into suggesting a number for a compensation increase for the next fiscal year. So we'd be looking at FY18. Saying that right? I would say FY17. Yeah, so looking at FY18. And then we'd pass that information to Staff Alliance, and the Staff Alliance will talk to the administration as the administration's working on that fiscal year's budget. In past years, we've also done things like suggested alternate compensation structures. You know, maybe if there's not enough money for an increase, we could do this thing. And my thought is this year, we're not going to do that. We will do, you know, probably work on what would be a suitable number. But what I'd like to do as chair of the committee is really push on the structure of UA compensation. You know, we have these salary schedules with these 1% increments, but we don't use them. Or if they are used, it's used, you know, individually by departments. It's not part of the salary schedule. And I'd like to see UA really clarify what is their intent with our salary structure. Because I think that is going to be even more important going forward when we look at, you know, in 2 or 3 years when there's money, hopefully, to hire people again. People who've been here a few years, you know, stayed through the lean times, are going to be at a disadvantage because they've never moved in the salary structure. New employees are going to come in and they're going to be able to negotiate higher pay. So that's really how I'd like to approach the committee, the committee's goals this year, and we'll see what the what the other members of the committee think, what we hear from the administration, and then the last thing I want to note is I was doing some math comparing our increases to CPI for Anchorage's CPI, and there's a little formula you can use to say, oh, what do say $2010 mean in 2015 or 2014, and from what I can tell, our compensation increases for the last 6 or 7 years really just match CPI. Of course, that doesn't really indicate whether or not the salary started at market share or at a fair market rate. But as far as the increases go, it's really just held our buying power steady. And that's something I'm really hoping to push with the administration, you know, that we recognize that we're not getting pay increases. We're just keeping the same buying power from year to year. In fact, we're probably losing it when you figure in healthcare. So those are my goals this year.
Thanks, Brad. And I think that point about just keeping pace with inflation and not actually increasing our earnings truly is a really valid point. And also something that hopefully the legislature can understand as well, that these are not really raises. They're just keeping us from losing money over time.
Right.
Or at least that's been the practice with these kind of across the board 2%, 2.5% adjustments. Any questions online for Brad? Yeah, and I want to stress too, I'm so happy Brad has stepped in again as chair on this committee. He's done a really fantastic job in the past, and I'm very glad to have him taking this on for us. So.
Thank you. And actually, I have one more question for folks at large. I've long operated under the assumption that supervisors don't generally, either they don't give or they don't have the budget to give merit increases. So, you know, your supervisor could put you in for an increase and move you up that schedule. But I'd love to hear from staff council folks, if you're supervisors or if you know people, you know, is that more common than I think? Or is it not common, and I'm right to assume that it doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
So I'd be curious to hear, you know, anecdotally from other people.
Well, I'm a supervisor, although I haven't been one for very long, but no, that's not been really even mentioned as a possibility, and certainly not in the current budget situation, has not been particularly encouraged.
The feeling that I have gotten from members of my unit that I've talked to is that it's kind of a joke. That's not really a thing.
If people have received them and don't want to announce to the world that they've received them or put it in the minutes or anything like that, I think emailing Brad is also fine. Or if you could also maybe let Nicole know too if you would prefer a confidential form if you want to share. But I think we can also trust Brad to take this in confidence if it's submitted that way.
Yeah, thank you. I'm not trying to dox anyone's salary.
I have one question, really. So as they've talked about performance evaluations, and I think PageUp is an opportunity for them at a system level to provide a platform for performance evaluations, is the Compensation Committee looking at that as a way to incorporate opportunities for supervisors to, provide opportunities to get a merit-based increase versus just the cost of living increase or not? Because in my opinion, there really isn't a well-defined process for supervisors to follow to help people navigate above and beyond the cost of living increase.
There's, I could say quickly, there is the initial relationship, which is you cannot get a merit increase unless you have a current performance evaluation on file. So if your supervisor did put in for a merit increase for you but hadn't evaluated you in the last year, it would be denied or it would be stopped until that evaluation was done. So PageUp should help smooth that out in that they'll be done in the system, there'll be reminders to do them more often, it'll be easy to report and see kind of who needs one. And I think it's always a good opportunity as well for employees. If you're getting a performance evaluation, which has been the struggle, but when you get a performance evaluation, if it's a good one, I think it is appropriate to ask about possibilities for compensation increases or merit-based to put it on the table. But I don't think there's been anything beyond that.
No, but that's a really good question, and it's something I want to bring to the committee as well, because I think there is an opportunity there. Historically, as in, I think, 10 years ago, in our previous, UA's previous pay paradigm, your step increase was actually tied to getting at least a satisfactory in your performance evaluation. And that went away, I think, well before our pay schedules changed and we went to the 1% salary schedule grid. And the previous administration had indicated that they didn't like merit increases. They didn't want to tie increases to performance evaluations. And I'm curious what the new administration thinks and also what staff would think about that. I think that's an excellent thing to pursue. What is the relationship between your performance evaluation and your compensation? If you're consistently getting excellent performance evaluations, is there any guidance for approaching a supervisor, or is there any guidance for a supervisor looking at who they're supervising?
Mm-hmm. I could jump in really quickly in just that from my conversations with President Johnson, his kind of starting point in terms of his paradigm for compensation that he indicated was that your compensation should be based on the job duties and kind of the level of complexity and so forth, the way it is now, basically. And that performance, because performance, you're looking at how did they perform over this time period, that performance-based compensation should be done in one-time pieces, so bonuses, basically, rewarded that way. And then that if your job changed in terms of complexity or taking on new assignments or new roles because you've consistently shown that you're capable of taking on those higher level tasks, if your job actually changes in terms of the expectations, then a compensation adjustment to the base based on that would be appropriate. And then, as well, the keeping pace with market and inflation rates in terms of retaining staff across the board. So I think his initial point for merit adjustments, or that they should be kind of one time and that the pay should be tied to the job specifically. But, that's what he's indicated informally. So I think that the committee should have an opportunity as well to have a dialogue about that, basically. Yeah.
I can probably keep going, but I think we've got plenty more on the agenda.
It's certainly a compelling topic.
Yeah, so if you have questions, thoughts, comments, you can send them to me. You can send them to Nate or Faye, and they can pass them along. We'll keep the group updated as we go forward. And also on the committee are, fortunately the name's right here. Janine Smith here from Staff Council, Mike Cox, who I believe works with facilities. And well, Faye, you're still listed, but are you still on there? Are you on there for Staff Alliance now?
I think I'm on there for Staff Alliance, but I don't know actually formally what my hat is. I'm on there in that I want to be looped in,
So you can also take comments to Janine or Mike if you know them and want to put a bug in their ear about something.
Great. So the next ones, the other committee's reports are written only. Before we go into roundtable, I forgot when we were doing announcements to open it up. Is there anything anyone would like to make in terms of announcements that you would like to be on the record? Because as a reminder, for roundtable discussion, we go off the record, so that discussion doesn't go out in meeting notes or anything like that. So if there's anything you wanted to communicate to the group before we go off the record, now would be the time. Anyone online? And anyone in the room? Okay, thank you. So I would like now then to go into roundtable discussion. So if we can stop the recording, please.